across the board, everyone is saying sales enablement is tough. Why? Because that goes deeper than demand gen and operationalizing, right? The things that we're focusing on, hey, we're pretty good at those. The things that we're kind of negligent about, well, those are problems, and those problems are going to impact our company.
Welcome, everyone, to the Crumunity podcast. I'm your host today, Matthew Trushinski, and I'm guest hosting today because I have the man himself, the founder of Cromulent, Lee Brooks, here with me to talk about some really exciting stuff and some latest reports that he's put out. Welcome, Lee, to your podcast.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
How's it feel to be on the other side of the table?
A little bit awkward, but I'm sure I'll settle in.
Yeah, you'll settle in. Everyone settles in. So let's start with the most awkward question of all.
Okay.
And we'll go right to the hardest one to answer, which is, if someone's new, like a lot of people, you're probably getting a bunch of people checking out the report for the first time, probably being introduced to Cromulent and to Lee Brooks via the report. If you had to give them a synopsis of where you came from and what your experience is, what would be your short form answer for that?
Well, I grew up in a road outside of a small town.
In a rural community. That the funny part is that's the truth.
That is all true. The other day I was thinking I could tell very different versions of my backstory, like in general.
Right.
One is very small town and one is much more, I don't know, progressive.
Have you figured out what one, like when you're the CEO and you have to tell your CEO backstory, which one it's going to be?
CEOs, it's more about having something quirky.
Right.
That's what's important. Growing up in a small town, I then moved to Waterloo to attend the University of Waterloo for the computer engineering program, knowing absolutely nothing about what it actually was or even where Waterloo was. That was kind of amazing. It set me on this current trajectory, got introduced to technology. It was right around the time that NASDAQ was sort of exploding in a good way, and very shortly before NASDAQ exploded in a bad way. The co-op program at Waterloo gave me the opportunity to get into a number of tech companies. Over my different co-op placements, I transitioned from development engineering roles into project management, product management, and then ultimately product marketing. And that was where I spent the bulk of my career, and the bulk of the career was at Sandvine. Subsequently to leaving Sandvine, I started Cromulent Marketing. It's really wanted to have some diversity, wanted to apply a lot of the skills I'd developed and the knowledge I'd gained. But even more, I wanted to apply the skills and knowledge that I wasn't able to apply at Sandvine. Sandvine was a very good company, but we were doing one thing. And in starting a consultancy or an agency or whatever it is you want to call Cromulent Marketing, that gives me the opportunity to work with a number of companies, mainly in this region, but to help them overcome some of the problems that we had overcome in my earlier career, to recognize, you know, some of those same challenges, to step in and maybe help them achieve things faster and better than we had.
So you think of your skill set as a marketer. Essentially what Cromulent brings to the table is what you bring to the table in terms of all your learnings and everything that you would say you've really helped propel companies like Sandmind forward with in the past. If you had to ask the people closest to you, think of like the three people that you've worked in technology the longest with, how do you think they would, you know, how do you think they would describe your skill set as a marketer?
I think they would recognize it as being quite unique. They would probably say I have a pretty unique mind. They would look at the technical background that gives me a very strong foundation to learn technology, learn the inside part of the story. And then the other part is that marketing, that genuine marketing interest and fascination, which has driven me for a very long time to understand the outside part of the story, the actual market. And that, perhaps ironically, is what's missing in a lot of marketing, especially technology marketing, where we know our own stuff really well, you know, as we should. What we often miss is the market and then being able to bridge that gap.
Yeah, so as someone that has been product marketing leader, has hired product marketers, has been part of the product marketing community here locally, how hard is it to find that particular skill set, like the bridge between the technical and the marketing skill set?
So I think it's quite hard, and that was one of the reasons why I ventured out on my own and started Cromulent Marketing was, and actually I look at it as three parts. Strategic technical marketing. So it's rare enough to find marketers who understand technology or technology people who can extend into marketing. And it's rarer still to bring in that third element, which is more of the higher level strategy, the subjective experience based, you know, can you take qualitative assessments? Can you look at longer term trends? Can you think longer term, make decisions in the short term that are going to be good both for the short term, but more importantly for the long term? And in talking to companies and associates and colleagues over the years, this was something that I suspected was a bit of an issue in the region. And the region's come a long way. I certainly don't want to diminish that. We have a much greater respect now for marketing. There are a lot more product marketing jobs, say, a lot more demand gen jobs and things like that up now than there were. But it hasn't matured. And when I looked at the numbers in the study, it's pretty clear there aren't that many people around here who've been in marketing a long time. And fewer still are, you know, have a very strong technical background as well, right? So having that right balance is something that's very challenging to find.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the report. So why don't you just quickly describe what this report is? If you had to sum it up into a couple lines, what would you describe it as being?
I would describe it as, it's really just shining a spotlight on the Waterloo region technology marketing scene. And it comes at it from sort of two approaches. One is a top-down approach, which was based on a lot of quantitative data that I gathered online, largely from LinkedIn, not exclusively from LinkedIn. I went to hundreds of company websites, and a little bit inefficiently, I ended up going to each of them like four or five times. And then a bottom-up component, which was survey-driven,
right,
where I wanted to actually hear from local marketers. What are your experiences? What are the things you think? What are the priorities? What challenges are you running into? And then we could kind of join the two. So we've got the very broad baseline or foundation of how many companies are in the region, what sorts of things are they working on, and then we look at more of the human side. Who are the people who are actually trying to do marketing at those companies, and what are their day-to-day or month-to-month, or what are their careers, you know, what are the things they're running into?
Why did you choose to do this? Like, if you could spend your time doing a bunch of stuff, you know, you chose to take on this project, why did you think it was important?
Well, you asked me a moment ago how people would describe me. One of the words that might come up if you do a tag cloud would be passionate. Right, there are things I feel very passionately about, and I'm not the type of person who backs down from that. There are things I think we should be talking about. There are a lot of things we know. There are a lot of things we suspect. There are a lot of unknowns. In doing this report, the primary reason was just to get people talking. Like, agree or disagree, here are some stats. There are some anecdotes, but it's largely stat-driven. Let's start a conversation. People are running into these challenges. Why are these challenges still here? You know, people are identifying these priorities. People at a lot of different companies have the same challenges or trying to execute on the same priorities. Let's talk to each other a little bit more. Let's figure out, the things that have worked for you, they might work for me, and the things that worked for me might work for you, and your experience accelerates my own, and just get people talking. We have a tendency in tech to, everything's new and shiny, we're used to building. So when it comes to marketing, we go, well, it's the same here. We've got the same, that's a poor choice of words. It's the same mentality that it's new and needs to be built.
Right, we better start from scratch.
Maybe it's already been done, right. And maybe it hasn't even been done in tech, right? Like, people in more quote-unquote classical industries and sectors have been doing marketing for a very long time. It's one of the world's oldest professions. I won't go to say it's the oldest profession, but it's one of them, and we could stand to learn from that. So primary reason was just get people talking.
And for the region, why do you think it's important? Like, so for marketers, but the region, is it a competitive thing for the region? Is it the economic health of the region to make this our tech community sustainable? Like, what do you think the ultimate kind of outcome
of the above?
Right.
Companies, organizations, because I want to be broader than companies. You know, there are a lot of great, you know, nonprofits and governmental and their organizations, and they have to do marketing in the literal sense to, you know, understanding their market, not just campaigns and advertising, which is a terrible mistake that a lot of people make. To get our organizations functioning as efficiently, as effectively as they can, you need marketing. You need more than marketing, for sure. You need, you know, operations and engineering and leadership and all these different aspects, but you absolutely do need marketing. So getting people talking about that? Can we be a bit of a rising tide to help all the marketers in the region, all the marketing teams, which in turn will help all the companies, all the organizations? And you know, you mentioned the economic health of the region. Will it help? Absolutely.
You know, it's a great starting point, I think, for getting into some of the specifics of the report. One of the very first things that hit me was the percentage of our teams that are marketers, both at, you know, the percentage of marketers in the region, percentage of companies that don't have marketers at all.
Yeah.
What do you think it means to be in, you know, the digital economy in Kitchener-Waterloo, to be a tech company and not have a marketing team? What do you think that does to your company?
So I'll back up for a second on your first point there about the number of people.
Right.
So I think in the report I said, what, 4.2%?
4.2%.
You've got your cheat sheet in front of me.
I do.
I'm going from memory.
I've got my stats.
That was a nice one. That was one of the sanity check metrics that helped me join the top down and the bottom up. Because top down LinkedIn, I could do queries and see how many people approximately in this company have a title that means they're in marketing out of all the people in the company.
Right.
And then on the survey, I said, how many people in your organization work in marketing? How many people are in your organization? So those two numbers actually aligned almost perfectly, which was great. It's like, yes,
right.
I don't have to deal with the problem of them not aligning, but it was really good validation that the methodology was quite robust.
Now, just for context, that 4.2 is low compared to most other tech communities.
So that 4.2, there are a few points about it. One is it was very variable. As I said in the report, that's the average across the region. There were a few companies, even good-sized companies, that had 15, 17% of their employee base was marketing. There were others who had zero. And again, good-sized companies even had zero. You could kind of explain it away with a five-person company or a 10-person
right.
company.
Right.
They don't have a specialist, or they have someone doing marketing, but it's not in their title,
yep.
or they maybe don't
sales
think
and marketing, or
yeah.
marketing
but
and
when we get into the companies that are 50 or 200 people and they don't have devoted marketing people, okay, that's a bit of a red flag. You know, are they outsourcing it entirely to an agency? That's possible for sure. I don't think it explains everything. I don't think it explains all the zeros there.
Well,
and
certainly there's a problem even if you are outsourcing your entire marketing. The odds of, are you then outsourcing your market knowledge?
Yeah.
Are you outsourcing your
discovery
and your
there are
communications
things,
with customers? All those.
There's this thing in business, you don't want to outsource your core competency.
Correct.
Right, because then what are you? And I think you're right. There are certainly roles that agencies and consultants can play. We can help accelerate things. We can get things done in bite-sized pieces if you don't have, you know, full funding. But if we become the expert in your market and we have to explain that back to you, that's a real long-term risk for your company. If you were to, you know, list the risks out that are going to stop your growth or be problematic, that's definitely one of them. And then you mentioned the 4.2% being very low. Now, this is where, you know, if we fast forward 5 or 10 years from now and Cromulent's a global sensation and these reports have been going on, you know, for a while, and we've got them on Ottawa and Vancouver and Toronto and Waterloo,
right.
then we can do more of this comparison. That's one of the shortcomings here or limitations, was it really is just focused on one region. Anecdotally, I had a number of friends and colleagues and associates who work elsewhere reach out to me who were very surprised. You know, they work in the US or they work in Toronto and they're saying, wow, 4%. Like, what's the point? Right? What are you gonna do with a marketing team that small? And that could be a real challenge. Are we dabbling in marketing but not actually really committing and doing it fully enough?
I think it's a great point, and kind of circling back to what I was interested in hearing from you.
Sorry, Matt, if I could jump in.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's a point.
Right. It's a data point.
So I said I wanted to get people talking about it.
Right.
Some people have talked about it.
Right.
Right? Is it high? Is it low? Is it good? Is it bad? The variability across companies, what does that mean? Hey, at least we're talking about it. And there's no shortage of opinions on matters like this. And by putting a bit of data into the discussion, hopefully it leads to a bit of clarity.
Well, I think that's a great point. What I'd like to hear probably from you is your opinion on what are those companies are missing out on. So those percentages of companies here in the region that don't have or aren't investing in marketing, get their 50, 60 people, what do you think the biggest risk they run in not having that marketing focus is?
I think the minimal risk they run is that it puts an artificially low ceiling on the company. Like I said before, you need marketing is necessary but insufficient for your company to succeed. You need to have a good marketing team for you to reach your potential. You need other things as well. But without that great marketing team and great marketing objectives, strategies, tactics, you're going to be limited. So kind of the best case scenario is you're not going to be as big or as successful as you thought. The more likely scenario is you're going to stumble along in sort of a land of the living dead. You're eventually going to just run out of your venture funding. You're not going to be able to be sustainably profitable. Your company's going to sort of spiral down and then be sold for scrap and people will buy up your intellectual property. So, you know, that.
Yeah, so the theme of limping along or the theme of kind of the walking dead in town, that seemed to also be a theme within the report somewhat. Can you speak at all to what you found in terms of how long some of our companies have been operating within the region while still not kind of maintaining growing as they should?
Part of the challenge of writing this report was I wanted to, again, because I wanted people to talk. I just wanted people to talk. I didn't want them necessarily to talk about the report, talk about Cromulent, talk about me. It was, let's all just talk about some of the issues we're facing. So I left as much as I could, and I think I did pretty well here. I left out editorializing commentary as to reasons why things were happening. It was more, here's the data.
Yep.
So I think one of the things you're touching on is, in the report I had a little part that pointed to a blog post called Growing Pains, where I just did a little bit of interesting data analysis where it suggested that our scale-ups aren't as big as they should be given the relative successes of other companies in the region. That point, that was an interesting point, and that actually got more media attention than anything else in the report. I followed up with that a little bit in a very recent blog post that was, I can't remember the exact title, it was like 11 Ways to Improve Marketing in the Water of the Region or something like that. In that one, I included a different chart that showed the number of companies that were of a particular size in terms of employee count that had been around for a particular amount of time. And that was to show that we have a very large number. Again, I don't know if relative to other tech locations, if it is higher or lower as a percentage of our companies, but we have a very large number of companies that have been around for 5, 10, 15, 20 years and haven't really achieved particularly high levels of scale. We're talking 5, 10, 15, 20 employees. So that's something where, again, here's some data, here's what I have observed, this is publicly available data, you know, I haven't gotten it through chatting with people over coffee, it's actual published numbers of employee counts. And what it suggests to me is that a lot of our companies are failing to launch. Really, really underrated movie, Failure to Launch, Sarah Jessica Parker and Matthew McConaughey. This is one of the tough things about the report and about this sort of conversation is I don't want any of this to come off as disparaging the efforts of those companies, the efforts of the people there, their commitment to trying to turn things around or to try to make things successful. They're bought into the idea. But what I do want to understand and help people understand is what are the reasons?
Right.
I think one of them, and I left this out when I spoke with Terry Pender of the Waterloo Record, said I have some ideas as to why some of our companies might be stalling. At the time, I didn't share them with him. One of them definitely is, I think we don't really do marketing very well. There are absolutely exceptions. There are exceptional people. There are exceptional companies. And they're the ones who get held up as counterexamples. But they're the exceptions. And we shouldn't worship an exception and think it's representative of across the board because it isn't. Instead, we should learn what made them exceptional and try to have that knowledge and that approach be used by other companies and other people.
Right. I think that's a really interesting point. And even looking at kind of the survey data you did around marketing tactics, it was clear to me in looking at those results that even the marketers in town believe that there's a lot of work to do in marketing. So chronically from the executive level down to the person implementing things on a tactical level, they feel like we're underinvesting greatly in digital. We're underinvesting in webinars, in video, in email and opt-in lists.
And the website was actually the number one thing
that
the respondent said we were underinvested.
So it's interesting to me as a marketer in town to say at a meta level or at a bigger level, we may be underinvesting in marketing, but even the people in marketing and the people that have marketing teams, those marketers also feel like we're underinvesting.
Well, have you ever met an executive who said they had enough investment on their team? But you're right. It was across the board or across the hierarchy.
But across all tactics as well.
Yeah, true. Yeah, it was. There weren't any exceptions where... And that actually surprised me. I expected... and I went into this total open mind. But one thing I expected to see was maybe some agreement that some tactics were over-invested. We're spending too much on this. We need to shift our attention to that.
Well, there was executives believe we invest a little more than appropriately in trade shows.
Yeah. Trade shows, man, they're expensive and they're hard. It's hard to measure the return on them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was the single one out of, what was it, like 15 or more than that data points.
Yeah.
21 or something data points or 27, yeah. Some large number. It was the only one, and it was just a smidge.
Right, smidge above appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting if you spend some time looking at the average marketer in town as well. In your mind, who is the average marketer in town? And what is the delta between who companies need that marketer to be versus who, on average, they are today?
It's interesting. I think if you were to do an average marketer, you would lose everything.
Well,
it would be one of those averages.
To be clear, you split it between executive,
a
manager,
and
the tech
team. And then I tried to do it by function as well.
Right.
Right. So if you look at the job posts around town, the majority are demand gen, marketing operations. They're very tactical. They're very counting driven. These things are important. You want to be efficient at what you do, but if you focus on tactics first, you risk getting very good at executing things that don't matter. Demographically, I expect a lot of our younger marketers, those are the roles they're filling. They're doing email campaigns and A/B testing and things like that. Our more senior marketers, people who've been on the scene 15, 20 years, they're looking more at strategies and objectives, and they probably haven't even been hands-on with digital. For myself, I've done very little digital. I understand it. It's numbers. My background's engineering. Cool, right? That stuff clicks really, really well. But I haven't actually gone and sat down and done UTM codes and campaign management and things like that. And then in between, or the next level, I guess, or the next factor is functionally, okay, marcom, you know, communications aspects. You're doing campaigns, you're doing advertising, you're doing trade shows. You might be doing some corporate comms. You might be doing some analyst stuff. Product marketing, you know, really truly understanding the market, understanding your product, bridging that gap. You could extend into product management. Is that marketing? Is it not? BDRs, some people, they're on the marketing team. Some people, they're not. Or some organizations, they're not. So there's a diversity here, which is both good and bad. It's great that we have grown to the point where we have these different marketing roles. It's bad if everyone in all of these roles is trying to reinvent things from scratch, and because that's going to stunt everyone's learning, and you're going to have to make all the same mistakes again that someone already made, and you could learn from them, and so on.
It's a great point. I mean, as much as we saw the aggregate views of who those marketers are in town and their experience levels, it is encouraging to see a lot of new marketers still coming to town, a lot of those new skill sets still being built. How do you think the region's doing in terms of bringing up new marketers to make sure that we have the next level of, you know, marketing management, marketing executives?
So this one is more feel than anything statistical. It's based kind of on my observations weighed against my experiences and just subjective assessment. I think, similar to what I just said, the emphasis on young marketers entering is demand and operations. So it's lead gen and it's doing things efficiently. Both those things are important. You need leads, you need to act efficiently, but that is not marketing. That is a tiny subset of marketing. Now, do we have the institutions in place to teach, you know, younger marketers the broader meaning of marketing, like literally starting with understanding your market? Is there a market fit? You know, what are the market problems, that outside-in approach? I'm not sure. One of the, and I guess to follow up on that, a lot of the, there are a lot of great meetups and groups and things in town. To make that content accessible in the 45 minutes or an hour that it's presented, it's often very small and very tactical. And frankly, that's what a lot of the attendees are looking for. How do I book a trade show? How do I do something overseas? How do I set up an email campaign? What's your marketing stack? What's the latest tool? People could spend 2 hours talking about the dozen different tools in their marketing stack, and that's kind of easy. It's very hard to go, what objectives are you trying to achieve and what strategies are you using? And then a follow-up or a related point is, if our companies don't grow, you don't get this internal mentorship. So on the previous podcast with Jackie Murphy, she talked about how at Avik, she was the second marketing hire at Avik. There was a co-op there first, who's kind of keeping things afloat and doing everything. And then Jackie joined, and you know, she spoke very glowingly of the person, the co-op who was there beforehand. Jackie joined as a very senior member to run marketing and to grow the team. Her first three hires were very senior people. That team is now, you know, several 5 years later or some number of years later, that team is about 40 people. And it runs from, you know, very senior, very few people in the region are more experienced than Jackie in terms of marketing, both in terms of longevity, for lack of a better word, sorry, Jackie, and and experience, like diversity of experience, you know, right. VC side, startups, scale-ups, all that sort of thing. She hired in senior people. They now have senior people, intermediate people, junior people can join that team. Very few places in the region are you going to join and learn as much as you would at Avik Networks.
Right.
Look at other organizations in town. You could probably find 4 or 5, you know, maybe more, maybe less though, where you have that type of hierarchy in a good sense and where you can join and have realistic expectations. You know, if you read some of the job posts today, they're absurd. People are just crazy when they put them up. It's like, oh, I'm looking for a marketing manager, and it lists functions across product marketing, marcom, corpcom, demand, digital, must be expert with this, 5 years experience here, 2 years experience here. It's absurd. They're right. Looking for like a VP marketing level scope in terms of all the responsibilities, but to be tactically hands-on with it all.
Right.
And they only want to pay $50,000, and they want someone great right out of school. Like, they're kidding themselves.
Looking for unicorns.
And anyone who steps into that role is just going to, like, it's going to be a disaster.
Right. Fail fast.
Yeah, and everyone involved will.
Yeah. It, you know, if we look at some of the other problems that, within the study, most marketers seem to face within the region, the other one that caught my eye was sales enablement.
Yeah.
So there was someone that... you know, they mentioned in this, the quote-unquote survey respondent says, sales and marketing work incredibly closely here, which makes the wheel spin effortlessly.
Yeah, the old flywheel.
Is that, you know, and then, so that's awesome for that survey respondent. But according to, you know, the data, in this case, rating the challenges from either insignificant to extremely significant, nearly across the board, most marketers in town rate sales enablement as very challenging or very difficult.
Yeah, it was, I think, the number one challenge they cited, and then there were a number of kind of subpoints that were challenging for them. Yeah, sales enablement, people often overlook when they focus on top of funnel, and they focus on demand gen, and they focus on campaigns, and all that, all those numbers. You can bring in numbers, and they're easy to measure, and it's easy to show arrows. So they take on a disproportionate significance. Sales enablement is more mid-funnel and bottom of funnel. So you brought the lead in, that's great. The salesperson, the account team is talking to them. Look at it from the prospect's perspective and their buying process or their customer experience journey. They have certain expectations about information that will be available to them. They have very predictable questions at different stages as they learn more about your company, more about your solution. That's where they would start. What can you actually do for me? Have you done it before? Okay, who are you? Okay, how does it work? How are you different? Maybe not necessarily in that exact order, but they come with these questions. Can you help me convince my boss we need to buy it? Do you have any case studies? Do you have success stories? Things like that. These are all sales enablement. A lot of those same tools or artifacts can be used to generate demand, but they absolutely are necessary, especially in a complex B2B buying cycle, mm-hmm. to help someone, you know, through the funnel. Without those things in place, the sales team is struggling. And they're struggling for, and this is bad for the organization for a couple of reasons. One is, without something written down or recorded for the salesperson to use, they're coming up with the answer on the fly. It's going to take, so it's either on the fly over email, they've got to go and write something down, it takes them 20 minutes to respond to
a standard inquiry. They've got to go check with 20 people within the company.
Yeah, they've got to chase down answers. They're coming up with their own messaging, so your message is fractured, and people form their impression of your company based on all the pieces of messages that they receive.
Your product or may not do.
You want those to be consistent. Yeah, Jimmy told me this, but Samantha told me that, right? So it becomes very inefficient. If we look at challenges of scale, having all the individual salespeople in your company having to answer all these questions individually is extremely inefficient. It's ineffective because your customer gets different answers. Sometimes they'll get the wrong answer. Sometimes they'll get a lot of overhang. It's just, it's really bad, right? Doing sales enablement effectively means anticipating what questions and issues your customer is going to have. If you ever have to write something down the second time or answer the question the second time, you should have written it down, right? And then it might be, you might use it 100 times. Even something as complex as a white paper, right, or a technical showcase marketing document might take you 20 hours to produce. And people, I don't have 20 hours right now. You know, everyone's really busy. Over the next quarter, you know, your CTO might be on 50 hours worth of calls. Like, it's a no-brainer in terms of an asymmetric investment in your business that helps everything scale.
And I know something that you have a lot of experience with, because I have a lot of experience with, is marketing to engineers. Marketing to a technical audience that, you know, they want to hear the stories, they want to hear the success stories, they want to see that it's been done before and that they're not the first penguin in the water.
That social proof.
Social proof. Yeah. But they also want to know that, you know, it's not going to blow up in their face and cost them their career.
Did you get that penguin in the water thing from me or independently come up with it? Because I've used it before.
I think that's just a saying, isn't it? That's just like a National Geographic thing.
If you happen to have watched a number of documentaries and know what happens occasionally
the problem with the first penguin in the water thing is if there's multiple, like, seals.
This is true.
Right? Like, then it's the first five or six penguins in the water until the seals optimal? Are full.
Go on, number two. Now I'm going to wait this one out.
I'm going to be the 10th in the water. But the other point there that you kind of mentioned is marketing to the technical audience requires a focus on differentiators that often I find, at least in my own role, you need to educate before you can inform or convince or persuade.
Implicit in this as well is that the audience the sales team works with is variable. You've got economic buyers, you've got technical buyers, you've got non-functional evaluators who someone else is going to make sure it does what you say it does. Will it hook into my APIs? Do you have data sovereignty? You know, things like that.
Do you think, you know, I'm just along those lines. I mean, like, the relationship between being able to close revenue or accelerate deal velocity or to help your teams win. Do you think that, you know, when we look at the roles in the region, is there enough focus on that kind of content, or are we just, again, too focused on demand generation, digital tactics? Yeah.
Statistically speaking, no, there is not enough focus on it. That was one of the, like, if I were to boil down the report into three or four findings, one of them absolutely was there is not enough technical content. And that was sort of the other side of the coin of a finding I think I put on the previous page, which was there is not enough bottom of funnel content. And speaking of both, the quality isn't good enough.
Yeah, I think most, again, it's funny how unanimous the marketers in your survey are.
Yeah.
Basically, again, like, seemed all marketers agreed that we're underinvesting in tactics.
And with every respondent who came in who wasn't right. someone I knew, I was like, yes, diversity.
Right. Diversity. Right. You know, again, universally acknowledged that sales enablement's a challenge. And then almost unanimously as well, rate their content somewhere between meh yeah. and good enough.
Yeah. And sometimes good enough is good enough.
Right.
You have this sort of the Pareto law where you got to where it needed to be, and now you've got a higher priority you should address. So if your top of funnel content is good enough, then like in literally good enough, it does what you need it to do, then shift your attention to the bottom.
Right.
But the bottom is tougher.
And the bottom is universally also what surveyed the lowest yeah. in terms of quality.
And the bottom comes later, right? So it's easy to kick that can further down the road. The bottom is usually more technical. It usually takes more time to do. That's where you're getting into case studies and you're getting into technical explanations of how your features work and how you address corner cases. And it's these things that they insidiously eat up a ton of specialist time. And maybe that's part of the reason why there might be a silo factor here, why we don't have good bottom of funnel content is, well, an engineer is going to jump on the call, or professional services, or the CTO. Or it might be that marketing is not even allowed or supposed to do that, or marketing can't because they're just marketers. What do they know? So instead, you end up with, again, this lack of efficiency because you have people who should be doing something. Your engineers should not be jumping on your sales calls, right? Your engineers should be building a world-class product. Your CTO should not be jumping on sales calls. He should be checking in on the state and trends and what technology is going to be driving your business in the next 2, 3, 5, 10 years. So to have over time this consistent lack of attention on bottom of funnel on technical content is something that is going to, you know, you started this part with, it's going to prevent companies from getting deals over the finish line. And there are really only about 4 ways that marketing can, 4 different levers marketing can pull to help increase sales effectiveness. You can bring more deals in, so the lead gen side. You can increase the win rate. You can protect value, so avoid discounting. And you can accelerate the wins. So if you can close a deal in 9 weeks instead of 12, awesome. Your company's, with fixed resources, your company's capacity to close more deals just went up, you know, by 33%, right? So if you have deals that are getting stalled because you're struggling to answer these questions about how the product works and how it's different from competitors, that's bottom of funnel, largely technical content. You need to build it.
But again, one of the biggest divides in terms of skill sets we have in the region is being able yeah. to, I mean, again, I'll speak from my own personal experience that, you know, you've came to marketing from engineering. I came to engineering through marketing, which is not to say I'm an engineer. I'm not even close. But, you know, I came in the other direction, which is you take a marketer and try to make them far more technical than perhaps the average marketer yeah. is. And some of these topics, I think it requires 2 things. It requires a genuine interest in technology and just being a genuinely inquisitive person that yeah. wants to know how the thing ticks.
Yep.
And I think you have to have a passion for tech. Like, you actually have to be genuinely interested in what's new, what's coming,
yeah.
why are we different? And
there has to be an implicit motivation because the stuff is hard to learn.
You have to be excited. You have to be able to get excited about, interface difference, or you have to be able to get excited about, you know, we have, this has 4 pins instead of 3. You need yeah. to be able to turn
and,
that.
And why? So and why? Why does exactly. that matter? Yeah. Right. And how can I help someone who isn't as, you know, deep into the technology as me? How can I help that person understand why it's important? And it's funny you mentioned that, because if I look back at my hiring over the years, when I kind of inherited and started growing the team at Sandvine, the model I inherited for job posts was, you know, you have to have a CS or engineering, you know, technical degree. And then over the years, I just came to realize that didn't make any sense. You know, we have these very technical people, but we need to tell stories. You know, you hire technical people, they're good for particular functions, right? What we needed at that time, we were very good. We had no shortage of technical people. What we needed was to find a way to go outside in on our message, to talk more about solutions and problems and help people find their way to our technical content and our technical capabilities. So over time, there was a pretty big switch where it was more, what's your marketing experience? Are you a storyteller? Do you understand the importance of being able to, you know, bring someone in and articulate the problem that they're trying to solve and to show how you solve it? And then I shrank the job descriptions even further, where it was basically, you know, I'm looking for three things, right? And one of them was exactly what you said. Are you intrinsically excited by technology? Right. Another one was, can you explain stuff, you know, in a story? And I can't even remember what the third one was, but that was it. I didn't care. Like, are you a journalist, sociologist? Are you an English lit? Are you engineer? Are you CS? I guess who cares?
Right.
Who cares what your academic background was? All that's supposed to do is to help filter applicants. Like, that's all that is. I was like, can you do the job? Will you be good at the job? Do you have the inner drive to overcome the challenges you're going to face while you're trying to do the job, when you're trying to track someone down and get them to explain to you why, you know, 3-pin versus 7-pin or whatever is important? You know, can you draw that on the whiteboard and that sort of thing? So you need that excitement. So marketers who are interested in technology, you know, do you keep up to date with phones and why new ones are different and or better, or why, you know, why is it a scam and people shouldn't be buying new ones because the old ones are just fine? And you know, could you explain that to me? That sort of thing. That is a much better predictor of your success as a technology marketer than did you come from a computer science program?
Right. I think it's a really interesting point that, you know, even if you look at the other side, which is to say you can look around your engineering organization and find, you know, someone on the technical side that has a passion for storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of...
Or professional services.
The amount of people that I run into from a technical background that just also have, in the other direction, have this innate love of marketing.
Mm.
Like, in the same way that I'm a marketer that loves technology, they're a technology person that gets the market, gets customer problems. And I think those are really exciting people when you bump into those people as well, because, you know, some of the best content that I've ever seen written has come from an engineering background that genuinely wants to show other people.
So I want to help you understand
that,
this.
The cool thing that they've built and or why the thing that they built is important.
That's sort of the leap. It isn't, I want to describe this. It is, and it isn't even just, I want to help you understand this. It's, I want to help you understand how this will help you.
Right. So I, you know, if you're to kind of put a bow on this whole report, for yourself personally, what do you think was the most surprising thing for you? Or like when you kind of wrap up this project and kind of look back on it, what's the thing that you walk away thinking that you didn't really know going into it?
I think I went into it with such an open mindset that nothing really surprised me. I was really happy to see how the data kind of congealed to reveal some very particular findings. Now, if I were to admit in retrospect, did those findings align very closely with things I'd suspected? Sure. And there's a little bit of personal validation there. Like, oh, I'm not totally crazy. Like, some of my ideas and opinions are well-founded. And now there's some data to actually back them up. But the point about bottom of funnel content and lack of technical content, that came out loud and clear. And if you go back to the very beginning of our conversation, you're asking, you know, a combination of marketing and technology, is it rare? It is. And we're seeing this is the manifestation of it, is we don't have enough bottom of funnel technical content. Similarly, earlier in the convo, we talked about the emphasis on demand generation and operations. Well, the flip side of that is across the board, everyone is saying sales enablement is tough. Why? Because that goes deeper than demand gen and operationalizing, right? It's the things that we're focusing on, hey, we're pretty good at those. The things that we're kind of negligent about, well, those are problems. And those problems are going to impact our company. They're going to impact our company in the long term. And you won't feel it as acutely as you would missing your demand gen goal this week or this month. But again, it's sort of this insidious thing because it absolutely will impact how our companies and organizations grow.
It's a great point. And what I think I was really excited about was I saw this past week you released... I'm not sure. Is your 11 ways to make marketing better? Is that in response to this kind of data, or is that you kind of saying, okay, I found a bunch of stuff here. The data speaks for itself within this report. now we're going to go to Lee's get well plan? Is this Lee's like diagnosis and next steps?
There are a few things that led to that post. One is, yeah, the report, I wanted to be much more academic and objective. Here's a bunch of data. I will describe the data. Please come to a conclusion or, you know, discuss, you know, with a friend what your conclusion is and what that means. You know, again, going back to what words would people use to describe me, one of them, you know, maybe a closely related to passionate would be opinionated. I have some very strong views. I'd like to think that I'm open-minded about, you know, developing those views, but there are also things that have been quite reinforced over you know, literally years of experience. So there are these issues that we're identifying and have spotted and started to come up in data form in the report. A couple of weeks ago, also, Ryan Bergio from Strive put up a blog post, which was, I can't remember what it was called. It was like, "We Suck at Marketing" or something. It was a fairly provocative.
It was a kick in the pants to local marketers to say we need to do better. Yeah, I mean, he listed.
He's challenging.
To be fair, he listed MyoVision as being an example of exceptional marketing.
He did. But he also listed North.
right.
And we're seeing a catastrophic failure of marketing in the real sense of marketing on their part.
Not in terms of demand gen, but in terms of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And again, I don't mean that against any individual or person on that team. Organizationally, it's a market miss right now. You know, can things turn around? I hope so, right? Technology can evolve very quickly, right? Just got to cross that chasm. So there were a lot of things that were sort of in my head. I see a lot of companies, people, organizations making these same mistakes. I didn't want to put up a list of, here are a bunch of mistakes that, you know,
right.
I'm going to point fingers and shout at a cloud and things like that. It was, these are some pretty straightforward improvements. Any individual one, and the extent to which any company could benefit from them varies by the, you know, the amount of challenges they're running into right now. Some companies will be great. A bunch of these won't apply. Others, all of them might apply.
Yep.
Right. So if you introduce one or two, you're going to see incremental change. If you try to check all 11 boxes, make sure that you're doing that, I think things will go pretty well for you. And it's funny because that list doesn't touch on anything like do bottom of the funnel content and do technical marketing. That's too specific, right? This list that I put up in that post was much more fundamental.
Right. Well, your first one is learn what marketing really is.
Yeah, which, I mean, is that too aggressive? Is it a bit of a jackass thing to say? But frankly, a lot of people, a lot of organizations don't know what marketing is. So here's the literal definition. I will provide it with you. I will point out a particular thing in there, understanding the market, right? And I always talk about, and I put this in the report, when people go, what does marketing do? Well, one is to understand the market and you bring that intelligence into the organization and it steers everything. What are you going to build? What's your market window? What's unique about it? How are you going to address these pain points? Who are your buyer demographics? How do you get in front of them? 4 P's, all that kind of stuff. But it starts with understanding the market. If you were to go around, just poll people, could have done this in the study. What does marketing mean? You know, put your definition in.
Right.
A lot of them would have talked in terms about advertising and campaigns.
They would talk about tactics.
Tactical stuff. They say we're going to do some marketing. What they mean is I'm going to do a campaign and in the next month I want it to return 25 leads and I'm willing to put $500 into it.
Right.
Like, again, it's not marketing, but it is a tiny part.
It's a narrow view.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to go through a couple more of your 11. We won't go through them all.
Sure.
And I'll get you to tell me more about them. Invest in enough marketing for it to make a difference.
Yeah, this is one of those things where if you do anything half-assed, you don't know, and it's going to fail, right? You don't know if the failure was because you were doing the wrong thing or you did the thing wrong. So there are a few related kind of sub-points to that. One is you need to invest enough in marketing and over the long term that you can actually see the returns. And you need to be disciplined about how you do it so you can come to realistic, informed, rational conclusions. Like, there are companies in town that just change what they do every day or every week under the guise of experimentation and lean and rapid innovation and fail fast, but they never learn anything from it and nothing ever improves. So what's the point? It's just wasted energy. It's wasted resources. You made yourself feel busy for a few weeks or a few months, but you got nowhere, right? So invest you know, invest enough, you know, hire enough people, enable them, let them, you know, let them do their jobs and execute, and don't expect marketing to be this white knight that, hey, we built this product, now all you got to do is go and launch it. Well, marketing should have informed the product you built, right? You can't just ride in the short term, do a bunch of advertising or something or aggressive discounting or what have you to get people to turn it into a launch success. Like that's not how it works.
Actually have to solve someone's problem.
Yeah, you have to solve someone's problem, and you know the only way to conclude, you know, to learn if something worked or didn't work is to actually see it through.
Correct. This is interesting. So maybe you can explain, well, first, stop accepting predictable mediocrity. Yes. What is predictable mediocrity?
Predictable mediocrity is that comfort zone of you know what you're going to get, and everyone's kind of okay with it, and which I guess is fine. Stop talking about wanting things to be different then, right? So if your operating plan next year is the same as this year, but a little bit of a change here and there, you're going to get predictable mediocrity. Salaries are going to get paid. People are going to get to go home from work at a certain time. These things are good, but that's if that is contrasted with talking about disruption and inventing new things and being innovative and a risk in, you know, a risk tolerant environment, then you know it doesn't align, right? So predictable mediocrity is, again, it's just one of these things that you kind of see it everywhere once you look for it. It's just this, you know.
Is it good enough?
It's like, it's okay.
Right.
And that's fine. I don't really want to rock the boat.
That's another thing I remember when I first joined Sandvine. Dave Caputo was big on talking to every single new person he could, mm-hmm. because that new person brought some sort of new viewpoint, or they could see things maybe that have become normal,
yeah,
within the company.
Yep.
And there's a certain window when you join a new company or new organization where you look at something and you're like, huh, that doesn't look quite right.
Yeah. Or people
listen
to
you. Why do you do it that way?
People listen to you because you're the outsider.
Right. So I think it, you know, for all of us, there's probably a bunch of stuff that we do day to day or things that happen around us that we accept as being, yeah, it is what it is.
We need to demand more, right? It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If we actually demand more and expect more, then things will improve. If we expect and accept that you're a startup, it's going to take you 5 or 6 years to figure out who's going to want to buy your product and what you need to build, then we're going to get a lot of startups who bumble along for 5 or 6 years, tweaking their product, trying to reach the minimal viable product sort of thing. Whereas if we demand from the very beginning that they identify market problems first. Don't start with technology and go, I'm going to try to wrap a company around that and wrap a solution around it. Start with a problem and go, I'm going to build something to solve that problem. I'm going to learn everything about that problem. I'm going to find out why that problem hasn't been solved before. Because there are plenty of things out there as well where, hey, we built this amazing technological solution for it and you know it costs $500,000. And you go to the company and they're like, yeah, we pay 4 interns $30,000 a year to do that.
Right.
So we're not going to buy your $500,000 solution. Like, it's awesome, you know. Well done. It's really innovative, AI in the cloud, all that stuff. But we have a cheaper alternative right now, right? So this idea of predictable mediocrity spans, you know, things big and small. Right?
Break the silos between marketing and other teams.
This was something I think that we did very well at Sandvine over the years. We were a really tight-knit group at the company in general, but there was a lot of respect. There were a lot of personal relationships and friendships there that spanned teams, and that led to very good things for the company. We, as a marketing group, worked closely with sales. Sales was a very good proxy. You know, you have to filter it a little bit. You know, they're giving you information about the market. It's their view, so it's coming through their lens, and some of their interests might not be aligned with the long-term interest of the company. But they were a great resource. And we give feedback on our tools, things like that. Professional services, awesome. Support, awesome. How are customers actually using the product? What problems are they running into? What's important to them? You know, what things should we maybe emphasize that's a capability that they didn't even know about? Working with engineering to find out truly, you know, our example earlier, the 3-prong or 7-prong, you know, tell me why this is better. What problem does it solve, and why does it solve it better than anything else? The writing of that technical bottom of the funnel content, you can understand technology as a marketer. You still need someone to explain it to you first, because they're the ones who built it. So busting those silos helped us do our jobs better, and it also allowed us to help other teams do their job better. So the more we understood the market, the more we could bring that intelligence in, feed it into the early product cycle with product management team, help out the RFP team on their proposal responses, check in with engineering to make sure that they really understand the exact reason, you know, why a particular requirement was there, and to make sure they understand how the customer is going to use it. Not how they think the customer is going to use it, but how the customer actually is going to use it. Helps everyone build products that actually fit the market problems.
And the last one, I'll cover the last one, which is talk to each other about marketing and talk about the important things. I think, you know, on behalf of the marketing community in town, things like this, the survey, things like this podcast are really awesome. So on behalf of all marketers in town, thank you for all the time and effort that you put into this. And I think that, I know personally, my team here at MyoVision, we sat down and we had a talk about this report and what we found in it. And it was a little bit of a mirror to hold up to ourselves and say, okay, relative to the community, how do we think we're doing? Mm-hmm. Where do we think we can do better? And it fostered some really good action items that we can go back and we can continue that conversation and make sure that we're not falling into our own complacency, that we're falling into our own groupthink. Yep. And I think that, you know, what came out of that meeting is we plan on meeting every month to talk about a different local marketing thing. Right. So on behalf of your 11th point, which is to spur more conversation, have more conversations, on behalf of the community, thank you for your work.
My pleasure. It really was.
Thanks for coming on your podcast.
Yeah. Thanks for hosting my podcast.
Thanks a lot, Lee.
My thanks to Matt. I really had a great time recording this podcast. I hope you had a great time listening to it. And if you haven't done so yet, please check out the report, the Waterloo Region Technology Marketing Spotlight, and let me know your thoughts. Thank you.